At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome to another sparkling edition of The Thought Police with me, Mike Graham, and him, Matt Kelly, from The New European, formerly the editor of The New European. Have you found, actually, that you're, now that your role has been elevated to publisher,
yeah,
do you do the same thing that you used to do, or
no,
do
not
you
at
do
all.
A lot less work?
No, I don't do a lot less work.
But you just sit in a room.
Just in case anyone from the business is listening.
Having high-level conversations and talks with people,
no,
I mean.
I have
rather
got,
than what I meant was, yeah. So I should rephrase that, a lot less kind of, you know, hands-on work.
Well, Jasper, the new editor, is, you know, he looks after it from start to finish, really. The only thing I still get involved in is sort of like throwing my weight in on the covers.
Right.
Which I enjoy doing.
And the covers are great, aren't they?
Yeah.
They'd be quite famous for those. Have you thought about doing them as a book or something?
We should do, shouldn't we?
You should.
Know, if it ever sort of stops, we should do a New European cover book. But we featured in an exhibition at the Design Museum in London.
Wow.
Yeah, about political protests.
Okay.
And they had this whole kind of area given over to the New European,
right,
with loads of our covers.
So will you do, when they have this big march on Saturday, you do something for that?
We'll do a special edition.
Yeah,
we sell foam hands,
okay,
with Bollocks to Boris on it.
Oh, right. That's
they go down very well.
What about the children?
Doesn't matter.
Well, you don't care about
corruption.
Well, after you admitted
don't
that you've now lied to your own children.
Don't care about
the
children.
You don't mind if they become foul-mouthed.
No.
I had a great experience at the weekend, actually, talking about mindless and kind of rather ridiculously dopey kids, right?
Yeah.
My older son, who's 15, and three of his mates decided that they wanted to spend the afternoon at the reenactment of the Battle of Hastings, which is what we do every year.
Right.
And I went last year, actually, but I didn't go this year because it was horrible weather. It was actually pissing it down.
Is that at a place called Battle?
It is.
Yeah.
Battle.
Imaginative.
Well, I always say to people, why didn't they call it the Battle of Battle then?
Yeah.
If it's Battle.
Because I assume it was called Battle after the battle.
Well, I guess it was, yeah. I mean, it's only a kind of a slightly tongue-in-cheek question. But why call it the Battle of Hastings? It didn't happen in Hastings.
No.
They landed in a place called Norman's Bay.
Right.
Which I assume wasn't called Norman's Bay either.
Not
before
until Norman
the Normans
got there.
Landed there. Right. So what, did we have a country with no names?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, was there no names for anything?
Well, the Carlton.
I thought
the
Romans
beginning.
Named London, right?
Londinium,
right?
Yeah.
Didn't they name fucking Hastings?
Well,
did they?
It might have been Hastinium or something like that.
Don't know.
Well,
anyway,
let's look it up.
You can maybe look it up. But anyway, so it was absolutely pouring.
Etymology, Hastings. Hastings name, meaning... Hang on. Hold on. It's... habitational name from Hastings, a place in Sussex. From Old English, meaning the people of Haster.
Right.
I don't know who the people of Haster.
So
now
they do the Romans then?
No.
Right.
After the after the Romans.
I mean, it's quite interesting down there because there are, there's like a submerged Norman ship underneath the beach, sort of along...
In Norman's Bay?
Just a bit further down from Norman's Bay. That bit's not called Norman's Bay for some reason, even though the Normans obviously got there as well, because one of their bloody boats is submerged underneath the sand. But it's very, I mean, it's great fun, the actual reenactment, because they have the battlefield where they think it happened.
Right.
And they have people dressing up, you know, walking around, and people camping out all night, and it's all done in the same sort of, you know, these people take it really seriously.
Yeah.
You know? And they have a beer tent.
Do you get dressed up?
I don't. I haven't done it yet, no. I mean, I might get that mad, you know, as I get older. I'm not into it. My ex-wife used to be massively into going to these things.
Yeah.
You know, we went to them in America.
Really?
The Civil War reenactments, which are really massively
organised. Yeah, no, I've seen some of them, I'll tell you.
And we went to Deal Castle, I remember, once.
Right.
And there was a lot of people dressed as French soldiers from the 18th century.
Right.
And we were kind of going, what the fuck is
it?
It is a bit mad, but they take it really seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
But in battle, it's kind of a tradition that every year that's what they do. And they do the fireworks instead of on Guy Fawkes in that part of the world on the anniversary of the Battle of Hastings. Right?
Yeah.
So they then decided they want to go and see the Joker, which has just come out.
Which is meant to be brilliant.
Which is this new, they loved it, right? But you've never seen anything like the kind of inability to organise themselves as these four. I said to them later, because in the end it was only three of them that went, because what had happened was some kid who wasn't supposed to be going turned up, right? And wasn't where his mother thought he was. A huge row ensued. One of the other kids then got blamed for not allowing him to do whatever he was supposed to do.
Right.
And two of my son and his mate turned up at the house. And I said to them, so I'll pick you up in the... You know, because I said I'd promised to drive them over to Hastings. They were like, we'll go on the train. I'm like, it's fine. I don't mind taking you. Because I got in a new car, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Nice. Very nice. That's another story.
Talk about that.
Another story I'll have to tell you. You know, Britain at its worst. Right? Anyway, so they appear at the kitchen door and I'm like, what are you doing here? Well, because they start telling me this long, drawn-out story about this kid, he's not going to name him, who's turned up and his mother's upset and... We're supposed to organise a taxi for him to get home. He doesn't live here. He lives about 4 or 5 miles away.
Yeah.
I'm going, look, I'm not interested in any of that.
Yeah.
When are we still going to the cinema? Oh, yeah. We decided to go to the later showing. And I'm like, well, hang on. We gave you permission to do the 3 o'clock showing, which means you're back by 6.
Yeah.
You now want to go to the 6 o'clock showing, which means you're out till 9.
Right.
That's a very different ball game. And there are parts of Hastings that after 8 o'clock at night, you really don't want to go. You know? And you know what it's like with young, with lads, teenage lads, they get picked on.
Yeah.
You know, and they're probably quite capable of looking after themselves.
But, yeah.
But I just said, all right. So, of course, I go up to put them in the car, go up to pick up the other two. This other kid is still hanging about, and there's a big row going on. And one of the kids comes over to me and says, oh, we haven't quite worked out what's going on. I said, look. I'm taking you to the cinema. I don't really care what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you don't get in the car now, you ain't going.
Yeah.
So then he gets in the car. Then the fourth one gets in the car finally and says this kind of, you know, rather emotional goodbye to the other kid who's obviously in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Right? And then we're going driving down the road and he's like literally in tears, this kid. And I'm like, what's the problem? He said, oh, I feel like I shouldn't really be leaving him on his own. You know, he's going to be in trouble. And I'm thinking, what sort of parents has he got?
Yeah.
You know? And then I said, look, would you rather not come? He said, well, I think I'm going to be in a lot of trouble if I go. I said, well, get out of the car. He starts opening the car door as we're driving. I'm like, would you wait till I stop, man? Unbelievable, right? Anyway, so that all happens. So I take them
all down. By the way, do you know... Oh, sorry, go on.
Go on, no, Karen.
No, I was going to say, you know, we've got a mutual friend in Hastings.
Have we? Oh.
Nick Fulliger.
Oh, really?
He's got a... You'd never guess. He runs a dim sum restaurant.
Does he?
He does, called Moi.
Blimey.
M-W-A-H.
We should
go
down there.
I'm told it's excellent, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were going to say... there's a woman called Sam who used to be editor of the Lady magazine who used to work at the Express years ago.
I don't know her.
I think she might run some kind of guest house down there as well. But anyway.
Yeah.
So I dropped them off and I say to my kid, I said, well, you know, because I'd said to them before, have you got tickets? No. Well, I said, well, how would you know you're going to get in? Well, we think it will be all right. I said, what, you think it will? So you've got hope then? I said, what if we drive all the way over there and you can't get in because it's too bloody, you know, full?
Yeah.
Oh, I said, it's like Friday, it's a Saturday night, you know, it's raining.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be pretty full.
Hot movie. Yeah.
So I said, look, whatever you do, just, you know, text me that you've got tickets, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, what do? They don't text me. I go and get petrol. I'm sort of waiting around just in case I have to pick him up and take him back home. So I thought, oh, bollocks, I'll just drive home. I get home. Not only have they not texted me, they've rung their mother. He's rung his mother because they needed ID, because it's a 15.
Right.
And they actually are all 15.
Yeah.
But none of them had any ID.
Right. So they wouldn't get
and
in.
You're kind of going... So she has to, you know, she had to text him a pick his passport page picture.
Were we this thick
no.
when we were that age?
No. Yeah. It gets worse. I go back to pick him up. two of them come out. I'm like, where's the other guy? The only reason I'm not mentioning by name is I don't want to get into trouble. Oh, he's gone to the toilet. It was about 15 minutes. I'm parked on like a double yellow line with the flashers on. Cab drivers are honking at me. I'm like, what the fuck is he?
Narrow streets.
We get him home, right? So I drop him first. The other one lives somewhere else. I'm like, I'm not taking him home. I said to Oliver, I said, his mother can come and get him from Battle, you know.
Yeah.
Fine. So I go to the first kid's house. He gets out of the car. I'm sort of doing a 3-point turn to drive away. He comes back and he goes, oh, there's nobody home. And I said, haven't you got a key?
No.
Jeez. I said, well, why haven't you got a key to your house if you're going out? I said, well, where are they? I don't know. I'll have to call. They're in a restaurant up the road.
Bloody hell.
But I'm like, what, you didn't bother to text them to say, I'm coming home, are you there? Or are you in a restaurant, in which case I'll come there?
Sounds like a nightmare.
It's incredible. And they got back, I said, you three are like the Three Stooges going on holiday. I said, you're about as well organised, you know, as a group of amoebas.
How's the car?
And they were laughing. The car's great.
It's a Range Rover, right?
It's a Range Rover Velar, so it's a small, it's not the big one, it's a sort of middle-sized one, right?
Nice.
But that's another, you know, story of stories, because they had to, you'd think this would be easy, right? Come and take away the old car, deliver the new car.
Yeah.
They only managed to do one of those things. So they brought the new car, but it was so long in coming. I had mates in town from Scotland, right? And we had to get to Wandsworth. I was with Emma, my daughter. We had to get to Wandsworth across town by like 6 o'clock. So I said to them, look, I don't want you here later than 4:30 latest, because we've got to leave at like 5 o'clock. The guy turned up with the car at 5.
Bloody idiot.
The first call came at 10:30 in the morning to my home phone, which I never use and I never give to anybody. Luckily, she was in.
Yeah.
From the guy to say, I've just left Manchester, but the truck's broken down.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I'm like, well, how is that my problem?
Yeah.
Get another truck.
Yeah.
You know, this is a very expensive car that you promised to deliver me, to deliver to me around about 2 o'clock.
Yeah. Do you know what, with my Tesla, do you know, I went there, because you have to go to get your Tesla.
Oh, dear.
I think you can pay like a grand or something to deliver it to you. But you go to this showroom, they sit you down.
There's one in Canary Wharf, is that where you went?
No, oh, no, it's not, a showroom's the wrong word, but it's like a big sort of depot.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, and you go in, and then there's like a cafe area, you make yourself a nice coffee, and then a guy just walks you across to your car, and it's quite a different car, you know, there's loads of stuff you've got
to. So they have to show you stuff.
Yeah, but it takes like 10 minutes, and then he says, on you go, you'll find out all
the... But this is what I was, annoyed about, because when the guy... I mean, funnily enough, it's not dissimilar to the car that I gave back, because they're both made by Jaguar Land Rover. So a lot of the knobs and
all the same,
are similar.
Yeah.
Because when the guy brought my Jaguar 3 years ago, he sat with me for about 20 minutes and just talked me through how to do everything, which was really helpful.
Yeah.
But this guy, I was literally, right, get it, you know, as he was reversing it off the double lorry, I thought, sure as fate, now it's just going to fall off. That's what's going to happen. And they'll have to take it back, you know. But the other one was the guy that was coming to pick up the Jag, he texts me at about 1 o'clock to say, I'm on my way to come. I said, great, what time are you going to be here? 5 o'clock. I'm like, sorry, I'm going to have to call you. You know, 5 o'clock's too late, because they'll have to go through the sort of checklist, because they're taking a car back. So we'll have to agree if there's any damage that, you know, that we both saw it, because they're going to charge me.
Yes,
you know?
Of course,
and that everything was, you know, clean and it was all fine, you know, because I've had it done up, you know, I've had it all touched up by some dodgy bloke in Bermondsey. Because they say, if you give a leased car back and it's got marks on it, they will charge you the earth.
Really?
I mean, I ended up going to court with the people who I leased a Mercedes from years ago.
Really?
Because they tried to get about $4,000 or $5,000 off me. Because you've just got a cat, right?
Yeah.
There was a cat where I lived that used to jump on the back of the boot.
Yeah.
And there was a few scratches, right? And I'm like, you're not going to charge me for those.
Having had a car for 3 years.
Yeah. And they were charging for things like, you know, little nicks on the wheels.
That's ridiculous.
And I couldn't find one set of keys. They tried to charge me £100 for a set of keys.
No, you've got to have both sets of keys.
I ended up going to court. I got it reduced down to about £500, you know. But anyway, so I ring him and I say, why is it going to take me? I said, can you not come even at like 4:45? You know, just so that we can have 15 minutes? No. I said, well, what makes you so sure you're going to be there at 5? That is the time I'm going to be there. I was like, this is ridiculous. I ended up calling the people in Birmingham who'd organised it, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's one of these, you have to be on hold. And I was, you can imagine me, and by this time, I've got no new car. Yeah. There's nobody coming for the old car. You're fucking steam is coming out of my ears. Because the insurance flips, right? So after the new car arrives, there's no insurance on the old car.
Of course,
So I don't want it. Because I can't, what if somebody bangs into it while it's parked?
That's right. You know? What, do you park it off-road?
Well, I've got a private road.
Right, okay.
So there's a space.
You've got a private road.
Well, I live in a sort of little estate, right? Which happens to be a private estate. So I don't have to park it on the street. I've also got an underground car park with a sliding thing, but I don't like to use it. One, because it's so small that it's almost impossible to put a car in there without scraping it.
Right.
And two, I once got in there and the remote control thing didn't work.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out. I'm not joking. And the landlord won't provide me with a proper second. Yeah. He said, there's only one of these. I don't know. I don't know how you get a second one.
Right.
And I don't know. It's an electronic, you know, buzzer. You press it, the thing opens. But I remember I was still working at the overnight show, right? And I'd driven, because we were getting on holiday or something. So I put a car in there and it closed behind me and I couldn't get out. I was going click, 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 nothing. And I thought, I tried to ring the landlord. He was going to answer the phone.
Yeah.
I realised I didn't know any of my neighbours to call and say, can you try and get me out of this? And I thought, I'm going to be stuck here all night.
Yeah.
Literally.
And were you?
No, because I finally somehow...
You managed left to make it work.
Somehow it managed
to
make it work.
The battery.
But I took it to a shop nearby later to say, I think this might need a new battery. They said, oh, the battery's fine.
Yeah.
It's just not a very good connection.
Right.
And I'm like, well, what can you do? They said, well, we're not allowed to hack them. You can't make another one. It's only got that one... That's the only one. That's the only one. We're not allowed to give you a duplicate.
Of course, otherwise you could just burgle it.
I mean, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm on hold, you know, your call's important to us. I'm going, eventually I get through to them. I said, look, I've got to leave. And this was about 2:30. They said, oh yeah, all right. We'll see if we can get somebody there before 5. We'll call you back. They never called me back.
Bastards.
I ring them back again about sort of 4:30. I said, I assume you're not sending anybody. Let's find out, shall we? It turns out the guy who was going to come and pick it up was in a minibus full of other drivers who were getting dropped off at various points in London to pick up various cars.
Amazing.
I'm like, haven't you got a better system than this?
Amazing.
You fucking moron. You know. Oh, yeah, he has to get public. And I said, well, maybe I can take the car to him. If he's going to be dropped somewhere at 4, why don't I drive the car to where he's going to be?
Yeah. No, that would corrupt
the system. We'll call you back. Never did.
Mm. Do you think that your problems over arranging the delivery of your brand new Range Rover car might qualify as first world problems?
I think they probably do, which is why I'm not expecting any sympathy, you know. But, I mean, the problem was that I didn't even get a chance to really properly, because my plan had been, right, they deliver the new car.
Yeah.
Emma was leaving to go back to the Middle East the next day. I thought we could drive off to Greenwich. There's a lovely pub we used to go and have lunch in.
Which, the Trafalgar?
No, it's the one, sorry, not Greenwich, Blackheath.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the top.
I know, yeah.
It's right, sort of, if you were on the main road. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's the one over on the right-hand side if you're going towards the
A2. Yeah, I know.
By the pond. There's a pond there. Yeah. It's really lovely. Yeah. It's kind of craft pub, but really nice food. And we used to go there quite a lot when she lived here, you know. And so that was going to be the plan, you know, drive the new car, get used to it, you know, and I'll have a lovely afternoon. Instead of which, I spent most of the afternoon on the phone and kicking things, you know. And as soon as the car arrived, all I could do was drive it into the space where the old car was, move the old one, and just fuck off to the bus stop and go to Wandsworth. A nightmare. And you just think to yourself, why is it so hopeless?
Yeah.
Why can't they organise anything in this country?
Do you know what's weird about it? I'm serious point is that that process you've been through, someone on the other end of a profit book margin saying, look how efficient we are, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
We don't pay anybody anything.
Well, imagine if I had a proper job, you know, and I'm perfectly willing to accept that I don't. Which basically I didn't have to take the afternoon off.
Yeah.
But if I had to take the afternoon off, you know.
Yeah, what are you meant to do?
I'm now going to have to take, because they're now going to come for the old car tomorrow, right? Which means that I would have had to take another afternoon off because they can only guarantee to hit a four-hour window.
It's outrageous, isn't
it? Which is, so if you've got, I mean, people go, well, you can't keep taking time off just for this, cobblers, you know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Outrageous. Now, anyway, let's have a look at some of the old communiques that we've had, shall we?
Yeah. What, Thought Police Pod.
ThoughtPolicePod.com. Although, also, some have started coming on Twitter. I've got this one from Becky.
Before you do that,
oh, go on.
Because I think that one's a proper question, isn't it?
I
just want to read one that made me laugh.
Okay.
For all the wrong reasons.
Right.
Richard Stevenson.
Yeah.
And he writes, Matt, I've been scoring the podcast since inception, and I've noticed that Mike is beating you 54-0 in terms of arguments won. By my reckoning, Mike Graham is probably the closest we'll get to a second coming. But how do you explain your failure to even get the better of him once?
That's a bit harsh.
Hang on in there, though. You do hold the title for best joke for the one about Everton's trophy room. Do you remember that?
No, I do remember that one,
Two policemen... No, what was it? Two fellas burgled Goodison Park last night.
Yeah.
Into the trophy room and made away, and police are looking for two men with a blue carpet.
With a blue carpet, yeah, exactly right. Shocking stuff.
Thank you for that, Richard.
Well, as somebody said, I don't know if it was us actually, last week when we said that, you know, Everton are going to have the best stadium in the Championship. Which is also very cruel, because they've dropped down, of course, into relegation territory, haven't they?
Have they?
Oh, yeah.
You're
well, because Newcastle beat Man United, so they've dropped into their third from bottom.
Oh, my God. God.
Which is causing some consternation to
Everton.
Can you
imagine if Everton went down?
Wow, especially with all the money they've spent.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't done it on the cheap.
They
it's not as if you can
down.
Say...
They're surely they're too good to go down.
Well, they're not good. No.
No, but I mean too...
They might be too big to go down.
Yeah, too big to go down.
But is that the case? I mean, Aston
Probably
Villa...
Not. Leeds.
Aston Villa went down. Leeds went down, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I think Everton would be the kind of team, if they did go down, that they wouldn't come straight back up.
No.
Because they'd lose a bunch of players... Right.
God, that would be amazing.
And it doesn't seem to be a very well-run place to me.
Well, I know Bill Kenwright, who owns it.
Yeah, I've heard Bill Kenwright.
Yeah, but I heard that he's not very well.
I don't think he is very well. And also, Mashiri, the guy who's come in, who's the sort of money man...
That's right.
...is obviously a bit of an egomaniac, I think. So I don't know how much control Bill Kenwright has anymore.
Which would be a shame, because Kenwright did wonders for them.
He did.
You know,
oh, he did.
And he's exactly what you need. You know, he's a guy with
his own
money.
He's a local guy with
passions.
And
he loves the club, you know.
He totally does. He's a really lovely guy. Right, let me bring you this from... This is kind of harks on from our conversations about Extinction Rebellion.
Oh, yes.
And it's from Becky, who lives in New Zealand. Hopefully you and Matt will discuss the red-hot, fiery planet known as Earth. What will we do? What we do will millions of sheep, cows and pigs... sorry, it must be with. What will we do with millions of sheep, cows and pigs when we no longer eat them and the millions of unemployed airline staff around the world don't have jobs? Which is a pretty good question.
Very good question.
I mean, one of the things that I don't think we have discussed yet properly is the whole kind of, you know, let's all go vegan.
Yeah.
I saw Chris Packham the other day talking about that, talking about how he's now gone vegan, right? And he has all these problems with various people that don't like the way he campaigns.
They hang dead crows.
Yeah, well, because apparently he's got some kind of policy, or he wants something to happen which involves, I think,
Shooting birds, isn't it?
Yeah, not shooting birds.
Yeah.
Which farmers, of course, reserve the right to do because they say that they endanger their animals or they steal
their crops.
Exactly. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on. I mean, when you move to the countryside, I did when I was first married, moved to Wiltshire, I was literally like a fish out of water, you know, because I've lived in London all my life. I went to Bath University, so Bath's quite a sort of cosmopolitan area. Yeah. I moved to this part of Wiltshire that was so dark. I couldn't believe how dark it was. I was like, there was no lights nowhere. And there's no street lights.
Yeah.
You know, you'd walk out of the house at night to have a fag or something, and you could hear sheep screaming. Seriously, I'm not joking. I took the kids for a walk.
What were they screaming about?
They were getting attacked by a fox or something, right? I fucking just really didn't take to it at first, right? And we went for a walk one day through these fields, and there was a sheep's leg, I'm not joking, from sort of the knee down, with wool on it, right? But it's just lying there.
God's sake.
So clearly the rest of it had been eaten or dragged somewhere.
Was it in decent enough state to...
It wasn't. There wasn't. It was too woolly, to be honest. We were just kind of horrified, though. But it clearly had been snapped off by something, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, for the first sort of 2 or 3 weeks we lived there, and I used to just come there at the weekends, I was convinced that there'd be some kind of mad axe man that would be wandering the kind of the villages, because it was very weird.
Yeah, well, it's the same
really weird.
In where I live near Norwich.
Yeah.
It's only like 15 minutes outside of Norwich.
Right.
And this is the place I stay when I'm working up at Archant in Norfolk. And But as you say, you go out and you get out of the car when you get home, and the heavens are just like ablaze with stars.
Oh, yes, beautiful. Incredible. It's beautiful.
But I haven't heard any sheep screaming.
Are you sure?
No.
Well, maybe they've all been killed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do you remember Arachnophobia, that movie where they move into the house?
Yeah.
And then the spiders all go crazy, and suddenly there's no sound of crickets.
Right.
There's no cicadas. And that's because when you know that they've all been eaten by the spiders.
Right, gosh.
You know.
I'll tell you what, you get a lot of spiders in the countryside.
You do.
My God.
Although once the biggest spider I've ever seen in my life
was
in my bath in London when I came home a couple of weeks ago.
How big was it?
It was about, like with the legs, thing. it was a good sort of size of that part back of my hand. I put it in a cup and threw it out the window.
Did you?
I don't kill them.
No.
My dad always said to me, you shouldn't kill spiders, unlucky.
But I think throwing them out into the winter is tantamount to killing them, but just doing it
very
slowly.
You must be joking.
Spiders, do they like it out there?
Well, spiders are... Well, the reason they come in from the cold is because they prefer it in the warm.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're going to... They're not going to die of starvation.
Well,
no, spiders are something...
Freeze.
No, they're... Well, not in London in the middle of September, this or October. You know, it's about 12 degrees. It feels cold today.
Yeah.
No, spiders are some of the most
resilient
and clever survivalists. Have you ever seen like a documentary about what spiders do?
No.
They're unbelievable. I mean, they will. The reason they have a web is that they like to kill their prey.
Yeah.
And just leave it there.
Yeah.
Or
to let it sort of rot
even
a bit.
Don't kill it. Just get it trapped in the web
and
sort of eat it bit by bit. I mean, they're really cruel.
Do you know an amazing thing I heard about spiders is that, you know, when they make their web, before they go off and make another one, they eat that old web. They eat the old one back, and that then gets digested and becomes the new.
One of the houses I lived in Sussex, funnily enough, we used to have these garden spiders, which are quite evil looking. They're kind of orange and black.
Yes, I know the things.
And they're not that big.
Yeah.
But they make really
look
interesting...
like tigers, sort of. Like, and they hold in the middle of the thing.
But they make really interesting webs
as
well.
They look fierce, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah, but I mean, imagine if as Becky says, all of the people who are involved in the production of food based upon, you know, carnivores.
What
are
we all going to do?
Well, what would you do? I mean,
do you know, I think we'll all be working a three-day week by then.
Why?
Because there's literally not enough work to go around.
Well, then we'll have to work for a lot less money. I mean, who's going to pay you the same money to do less work?
Well, I don't
unless
know.
Unless you go to the BBC.
But if the profits are the same and it's all mechanised or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but it never is it? I mean, when we were kids, we were told that we would be hardly working at all.
Yeah.
You know, which is probably true. Certainly, I've worked harder than this, there's no doubt. But, I mean, in our heyday of sort of, you know, crazed, you know, newspaper executive-style stuff, and even when I was a reporter, I was working non-stop.
Oh, mate, honestly.
It never stopped.
Those years at the Mirror, literally 14 hours a day, I mean, every day.
Right.
And then you had to go and listen to Piers tell
and then you had to go to the pub,
pub,
yeah, you know? Yeah. Where he said, I remember he once said to me in one of those little sessions in the pub, he said, the thing about you is you're great at lots of stuff, but you could never do what I do. He was brilliant at that, because in the one hand he's making you feel great, and on the other hand he's sort of dashing the cup from your lips. What do you mean I could do your fucking job? But actually, very few people could do Piers' job as he does it. But we've spoken enough about it.
Yes.
So what about all the airline staff? What about all the people making cars? I mean, I've been watching, as you have, over the past week, the ludicrous, and I actually call it ludicrous reporting as well. I don't think we should be giving these Extinction Rebellion people any kind of publicity at all.
No.
Listening to them in any way which is serious, in any way, shape, or form.
I think they are just absolute showboating clowns.
Yeah, you
know,
the dancing and the rave thing, and I mean, one of the guys was on Question Time, right?
Yeah,
with that sort of funny.
I didn't
looking,
see that. I can't stand Question Time anymore.
Oh, it's so bad.
Ever
it
since
really
they
is.
Didn't put me on a panel.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Well, do you know, I was being trained to go on it years and years ago when I was at the Express,
right?
And then I got fired before I could go on it. Funny story of my life.
Yeah.
And the other guy who was being trained at the same time was Peter Hitchens. So it was me and him, and he's been on it a few times. But he's incredibly sort of...
I like Hitchens.
I like Hitchens.
I don't agree with the word he says, but
no,
I like the way he...
But I love his logic.
Goes about it.
And I quite like him on Twitter.
He's great
on
Twitter.
He's quite sort of matter-of-fact.
Acerbic.
I read all of his tweets in his voice as well.
That's right.
Well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
You know.
And he's sort of under the shadow of his brother, Christopher.
Yeah.
But he's his own man, isn't he?
He kind of admits that his brother's brighter than him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I always had a problem with him because when he was in America, and I'm not telling tales out of school particularly, he was the sort of Washington correspondent.
Ooh, Christopher or Peter?
No, Peter. Peter. He was sent out there he'd been in Moscow as well.
Yeah.
And he got sent out to be the Washington correspondent, developed a sort of pathological hatred of Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And whenever he came back to London, he would tell me that he was going to be impeached and, you know, that was going to be... And I was like, that's rubbish, man. You know, absolute cobblers. I know American politics better than you, but we still have loads of arguments. But there was a shooting in Florida, where a couple of Brits had gone over and hired a car out of Orlando Airport or Miami Airport or something, driven off and stopped in a lay-by, which is never a good idea.
Oh, I remember this.
And they got...
They got done by a gang.
By the basically Crips carjacked, or, carjacked the car.
That's right.
And
it was a couple,
they
wasn't
got
it?
Shot in the head, yeah.
Hadn't they I think if this is a long time ago. I think they'd just been married or they were just engaged.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about when I was foreigner to the Express, so probably about 96, 97
around
there.
It was terrible, yeah.
Really bad story. Yeah. Anyway... I said, right, well, I think the closest person we've got is Peter Hitchens. Let's send him down there, you know? Not a problem to get from, you know, you can get a flight in a couple of hours, he'll be there.
Yeah.
He refused to go.
Really?
On the grounds that it was too dangerous.
Really? To go to LA?
To go to... No, Florida.
Florida, that's right, it was.
I said, are you fucking joking? Yeah. What do you mean it's too dangerous? It's not a war zone you're going to. It's Florida. Well, people have been shot. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, that's the story. He wouldn't go.
That reminds me of when Richard Wallace, who was the editor of the Mirror at the time, and then he was the guy that took over.
Yeah, Piers
right. So when he was, but before that, he was like the US correspondent.
Oh, he was. That's right.
And he bought himself. I just remember, Dickie won't mind me saying this, but he spent an age finding the right flat in apartment.
Oh, I'm sure.
In Manhattan,
yes, it's very important.
Couldn't really do anything until that had happened.
Right.
Finally found that, and it was basically the first time that we got the chance to get him to do a story after about 3 months in New York, settling in.
Oh, you've just reminded me that I went to New York during the period he was there, and we had lunch in PJ Clark's.
So I had a great time with Dickie one night in a club in New York. But anyway, this restaurant had made something they called the Kobe Burger.
Oh, right? I know,
which was made out of Kobe beef.
Kobe beef, yeah.
And it was $50.
That's the stuff De Niro sells he's banned Trump from eating.
It's like the most expensive, best beef, and they feed the cows on beer or whatever. Anyway. So we said to Wallace, right, mate, can you just... It's a dead simple job. It's down the road.
Yeah.
Right? Can you go down? It was a Saturday morning. Go down. Get the chef. It's all been set up. Go and eat one of these Kobe burgers.
Get it's not the hardest assignment.
Get your photo taken and just write. Tell us what he was like. Right. And he said, I can't do it. And we said, Richard, you've got to do it. Piers really wants it. He said, I can't do it. I'm playing tennis in the Hamptons this afternoon.
He was your gentleman reporter.
We got our revenge because he went down and he flashed in, took a bite of this thing, got his photo taken, then buggered off to the Hamptons. And there's a photo of Richard Wallace with his mouth wrapped around this huge burger. And every time he was mentioned in the news or the trade press, this was the photo we'd send off to the Press Gazette.
I mean, again, without wishing to make light of a bad story and everything terrible, but I remember Piers going absolutely apeshit on 9/11 when Andy Lyons, who was the New York correspondent, wasn't in New York.
Yeah.
Because he had gone over there with his family and with his kids. And generally speaking, with kids, you don't really want to live in Manhattan. So he lived in Connecticut.
He went up.
And of course, it happened on sort of, I think, was it a Monday? It wasn't a Monday, was it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it was at 9 o'clock in the morning.
That's right.
And he wasn't in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And he was in Connecticut. And I remember Peter's going, why the fucking hell is our New York correspondent not in New York? Yeah. What's he doing?
Andy Lyons, though, pulled off the best thing. But I think it's one of the, I tell people
Andy's
about this
a great
all
guy.
The time. Piers said, get an interview with Bill Clinton. I can't remember. I think it was after he must have just finished his presidency, or maybe it was the. Anyway, Clinton was staying in his private house somewhere, upstate New York, I think it was, and it was snowy, so it must have been around the time of the inauguration.
Yeah.
It was snowing down, and Andy stood outside his door for 5 days,
right?
And the Secret Service are there and everything, and eventually Clinton said to one of his Secret Service, who the hell is that guy?
It is the power of the doorstep, isn't it?
And the guy said, he's a bloke from the Daily Mirror in London. And Clinton said, for Christ's sake, get him inside and give him what he wants. You know, and he got the interview and it was world exclusive.
Brilliant.
Good report.
Yeah, no, Andy's still great reporter. Brilliant. And he left the business for a while, didn't he?
When
he was PR for a bit.
That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely hated it. And now he's back. In fact, I ran into him a few weeks ago at Mickey Brennan's... picture exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd forgotten that they'd worked together in New York, because you just kind of forget that the
That's
people's
right.
lives overlap. And funnily enough, it was the day of the Ben Stokes story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where we had a very interesting conversation about the way the media now is. And he was of the opinion that he said, you know, nowadays the Mirror could never have run that without going to Ben Stokes.
Yeah.
And in fact, they put it up on the online page.
Yeah.
But as soon as his statement came out, they just pulled it.
Yeah.
And I was going, I was saying, I find that so strange.
But I can understand
I totally get it. Yeah. And I don't think it was the wrong decision or anything like that. But I think it kind of proves why, certainly in my case, anyway, I don't know about you, my news judgment would not work, maybe now in a newspaper, you know, if I was calling the shots.
Because you'd be too gung-ho,
Because I might be just too gung-ho. I mean, I'm already much more, I'm much more kind of soft around the edges, you may not believe that, than I used to be.
because
of course on the radio you can say something and it's there,
so you've got to
you have to be so careful about how you talk to people and what you say. I mean, funnily enough, when I was talking to Alistair Campbell, he used the phrase spaffed up the wall, and I said, we don't use that kind of language in the independent republic, and he said, well, but the prime minister shouldn't have said it then, and I said, well, of course he denies saying it, even though there's a recording of him saying it, and we sort of had a laugh about that. But you know, you just have to be so careful about how you regard people now, and there's all kinds of areas that you just don't go.
The other great thing about Andy Lyons was he was a massive Chelsea fan.
He was a massive Chelsea fan. Still is,
But every job he went on in the States, it didn't matter what it was, he would be photographed wearing a Chelsea shirt. So, you know, he'd go on the world's biggest roller coaster, there's Andy in the front in a Chelsea shirt.
Right.
He'd be interviewing Bill Cosby, you know, there he is in a Chelsea
shirt.
That's very funny. Piers kept saying, can you tell him to take that fucking Chelsea shirt off? It's not the story.
Funnily enough, I've got a picture of him in a Chelsea shirt because he left the Express to go to the Mirror.
Yeah.
And at his leaving do, we had it, I think, in Stanford's Wine Bar, which was near the old Express building.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went off to Chinatown, as you do, you know, drunkenly. And at one point, somebody came in that we didn't realise was coming. And they went, where's Andy?
Yeah.
And we looked over there and he was lying face down behind the table wearing a Chelsea shirt. He'd had too much already. It was brilliant. And we were demanding, have you ever done this? If you go to Chinatown, you demand the Chinese menu.
Yes.
So that they bring you what's on the Chinese menu, which is separate from the regular menu.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have things like snake
and eels. Chicken claws and stuff.
Yeah, like chicken's feet. Yeah, I mean, really weird. And you can only eat it when you're drunk.
Yeah.
You know, but it's quite good fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll have to do it one day.
You know what she was, Becky was in New Zealand, wasn't she?
Yes.
So I've got...
We haven't really answered the question.
I'm told this is a true story, and this will be the only occasion where New Zealand and lambs and pigs are relevant in one joke.
Right? Okay.
But I'm told this is true, that England played a friendly in New Zealand once, part of the sort of Southern Hemisphere.
You're talking about football?
England football.
Right.
And it was when Gascoigne was playing, right? So the England team was staying in this very nice hotel.
And they're all called the All Blacks, aren't they? They're still called the All Blacks, aren't
they? The football team?
I think so.
I'm not sure about that.
Well, they all play in black anyway.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong
about that.
Anyway, Gazza's sitting there having his breakfast, right? And everyone's eating their breakfast. And the waitress comes to Gascoigne and says, what would you like for breakfast, right? So Gazza says, I'll have the full works, love. Said, sausages, bacon, eggs, mushroom, beans, hash browns, toast, white and brown, jam, marmalade, a lot, everything. Throw it all in. And the woman says, write it all down. And then she comes back from the kitchen with this heaving plate of food and puts it in front of Gascoigne. She says, here's everything, Mr. Gascoigne. Except, I'm sorry, the chef says today we have no bacon.
Right.
And Gazza looks at it and says, are you telling me in a country with 14 million fucking sheep in here, no bacon?
Oh, dear. That is very funny.
Right.
That is a good way to end. This has been The Thought Police. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
By this time, I've got no new car. Yeah. There's nobody coming for the old car. Your fucking steam is coming out of my ears. Because the insurance flips, right? So after the new car arrives, there's no insurance on the old car.
Of course,
So I don't want it. Because I can't... What if somebody bangs into it when it's parked?
That's right.
You know?
What, do you park it off-road?
Well, I've got a private road.
Right, OK.
So there's a space.
You've got a private road.
Well, I live in a sort of little estate, right? Which happens to be a private estate. So I don't have to park it on the street. I've also got an underground car park with a sliding thing, but I don't like to use it. One, because it's so small that it's almost impossible to put a car in there without scraping it.
Right.
And two, I once got in there and the remote control thing didn't work.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out. I'm not joking. We went for a walk one day through these fields.
Yeah.
And there was a sheep's leg. I'm not joking. Like from sort of the knee down, with wool on it.
Yeah.
Right? But it's just lying there.
God's
sake. So clearly the rest of it had been eaten or dragged somewhere.
Was it in decent enough state?
It wasn't. There wasn't. It was too woolly, to be honest. We were just kind of horrified, though. It clearly had been snapped off by something, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, for the first sort of 2 or 3 weeks we lived there, and I used to just come there on the weekends, I was convinced that there'd be some kind of mad axe man that would be wandering the kind of the villages, because it was very weird.
He said, "I can't do it." He said, "Richard, you've got to do it." Piers really wants it. He said, "I can't do it. I'm playing tennis in the Hamptons this afternoon." Are you telling me in a country with 14 million fucking sheep in you, no bacon?